Welcome to Scouts Out, an original science fiction story by A.A. Foringer, set in his Outfitters universe. All of the Outfitters universe stories are available in ebook format at smashwords.com. If you would like to support the author or read the story for yourself, please buy the book at smashwords.com.
Chapter 24. "Where are you leading me?" Leo said, laughing, finding the whole process of being led around blindfold intriguing.
"You will see when we get there. Step up," Faith said, leading.
"Okay, but this had better be short and sweet. I still had a few things I wanted to double-check on the lion."
"Sweet, yes. Short, depending on how much you like it," Faith responded, stifling a laugh.
"Okay, but I wanted to check the energy levels one more time before the commander arrived."
Faith jabbed him with her small but hard fist.
"Ow! Why did you do that?" Leo said, rubbing his ribs where she had punched him.
"I told you, everything was fine. Me and my crews have been working on that ship of yours nonstop for the last 2 days, and I have told you again and again the lion is in perfect condition."
Leo stumbled slightly and regained his balance with Faith's hand on his elbow.
"Okay, well, we are almost here. Wait a second, let me open the door."
Leo heard a door open and smelled something, but could not place it. Whatever it was, it made him more hungry than he was, since it was about 2 p.m, and he hadn't eaten since 6 that morning.
"Okay, I'm going to leave you for just a second. Put your hands here."
Faith put Leo's hands on what he guessed was the back of a wooden chair.
"How much longer do I have to wait, Faith?"
"Faith, can I take this blindfold off now?" Leo couldn't hear Faith anymore, but waited for a while, then a while longer.
"Okay, take off the blindfold, Leo," Faith said, from near his left elbow.
Leo took it off slowly and was momentarily blinded by the light, but he quickly blinked his eyes and everything came into focus. There before him was a huge table laid out with a complete formal dining set, right down to the candlelight. The table was laid out with turkey, ham, mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes, and a variety of other dishes.
"Happy Thanksgiving."
There, standing around the table, was his crew and a variety of women from the Endurance. They were each standing behind a chair. Next to Leo was Faith, who was now wearing a simple blue dress, whereas when he initially had met her at her cabin, she was wearing her typical duty uniform.
"Wow," was the thought that ran through his head, looking at her.
Leo looked around the room. His entire crew was out of uniform as well, sporting a variety of shirts and jackets. And if Leo was not mistaken, Fia was wearing a traditional Samoan lava-lava instead of pants. Fia had worn the lava-lava once before on the lion. Holiday had mistakenly laughed and called it a dress. Holiday then visited the auto dock. Leo looked closer and appeared that everyone was out of uniform, including the women from the Endurance who were also wearing dresses. He took this all in about 3 seconds. Then Faith came up beside him.
"I was looking to do something special for you, and I was surprised to find out that today is the last Thursday in November, which is a holiday in America, so I set this up."
Then she kissed him on the cheek.
"Thanks," he whispered back, as he kissed her quickly on the lips. This was noted by the crew, who let out a murmur of approval and a few catcalls, including the phrase, "Get a room."
Settle down," Yoshida shouted from off to Leo's right. The room got quiet quickly. Yoshida continued, "As you know, this is our last meal on the Endurance for a while, and a special holiday for the captain." Leo grimaced at this part about the last meal for a while, but then remembered it was common knowledge among the support crew that something special was up because a recon ship had not been in dry dock for this long since before they had left Sanctuary. Yoshi continued, "And since we are going to leave soon, I raise a task to our captain, who volunteers us without thinking." There were a few snickers at this. "Beats us to a bloody pulp with his incessant drills, and then cuts off our drinking before jumping into a vacuum."
"Hear, hear," cried Fia, who was still mad about Leo's 12-hour rule concerning drinking before takeoff.
"So I give you Captain Grant, the best long-range recon captain in the fleet." There were murmurs of agreement, and then glasses started to clink together. Leo clinked glasses with Faith, who then turned to Lieutenant Van Peterson, whom Yoshida had gotten friendly with over their numerous trips aboard the Endurance, and clinked her glass. Leo caught sight of Yoshida, who just nodded and smiled. The table got quiet, and everyone turned to Leo, who looked around the room at his grinning crew, who has now looked rather tame out of uniform, but whom Leo knew that within a couple hours, when they got back in uniform and strapped on weapons, they'd be a fighting force to be reckoned with. Leo hoped he had not made a mistake in volunteering them for this mission. "Well, I don't know what to say," Leo started. "Well, then, can we eat?" shouted Verde from across the table. "Not yet. I will think of something," Leo shouted back. This elicited a moan from the group. Thanksgiving in my country was a day for the nation to reflect on what it had to be thankful for, and I suppose this day is no different. I myself am thankful to be with you all. My life on Earth seems a lot longer past than just 100 years or so, and a lot further away than a couple million miles. It seems as though I am a different person. Leo looked around the room. I know a few of you feel the same way, and I know a few of you still miss home because I know I still do. Most of the people around the table nodded. A few had tears in their eyes. But to tell you the truth, I would not trade these last 2 years for 100 years of my old life. And no matter what happens in the future, I am thankful for what I have seen and done now. Leo's voice cracked at the last part, and he was not sure everyone had heard what he said. He took a deep breath and continued. So I think we should give a prayer to God, thanking him for what he has done, and asking him to protect us tomorrow, and whatever that may bring. Gonzales, would you say a few words? The group turned as a whole towards the head enlisted man of the Lion and crew elected chaplain. O Lord, thank you so much for this chance to serve you. Please make us your arm and let us fight for truth, justice, and right. We come from many different places, but we are more alike than we are different. Please protect us in the days ahead and let us do your will. In the name of the God of Israel, amen. Amen was chorused around the room. Gonzales looked at Leo, as did everyone else. Let us eat, drink, and be merry, my friends, Leo announced, looking around the room. For tomorrow we shall... The crew of the Aryan Lion looked at Yoshida, who had his hand clamped on the mouth of the much smaller Lieutenant Van Peterson. Leo looked at her and moved the hand of his friend away slowly. You have to understand, Lieutenant, we are a bit superstitious, and we never complete that sentence. The small pilot nodded and didn't say anything else, that she just smiled meekly and turned red. Gentlemen, if you would please seat our female visitors, Leo announced, and suited words to actions, he pulled Faye's chair away from the table for her. After she was seated, Leo sat down himself. The crew and the guests ate for about an hour and a half in the main courses, all the way down to the many delicious desserts. After the meal, the crew and the dates made their way up to Leo, who was standing at the door to the holodeck with his arm around Faith. The ladies each wished Leo a safe trip, and Leo reminded the guys he wanted the back of the ship, alcohol-free and ready to go at 2,000 hours. Some of them complained, but Leo knew they would be there an hour before his deadline. As the last couple left, Faith let out a sigh of relief. You okay, sweetie? Leo asked as he watched her slide into a chair near the door. Fine, just exhausted, she said, smiling. Dinner was great. Everything was great. I was surprised. The food was wonderful, Leo commented as she sank down in the large chair. Leo slid to the floor next to her and took off her shoes and began to rub her feet. Oh, keep doing that and I will throw you a party like this every year, Faith replied, her eyes closed now. Leo didn't reply to this. He just rubbed her feet and smiled at her. I was so worried that a drill or something might have interrupted this and all my plans would have been for nothing, Faith said, looking down at Leo. Well, nothing went wrong, and everyone had a great time. Yeah, I guess they did, didn't they? Faith said, sliding her feet away from Leo and putting them back in her shoes. Leo took the cue and stood up, offering his hand to help her up from the overstuffed seat. Faith took his arm, and after getting up, walked with him slowly towards the door. Where did this room come from? Leo asked, as Faith keyed up the sequence on the control panel near the door. It's just something I sort of threw together from a variety of sources. Just a bunch of large dining rooms, really. I tried to pick out the most comfortable ones, and the ones that would allow the most intimacy. Leo watched over her shoulder as she keyed the control panel to dissolve the setup of the room after the main doors closed. Faith had started this habit after one date in the holodeck when Leo had dissolved the entire illusion right before their eyes. Faith had commented how it ruined the whole evening because nothing about it seemed real after watching their program shut down. After that, they always set the program to dissolve after the main doors were completely closed. They walked out of the room and made their way casually back to Faith's room, where when they arrived, Leo went inside and had a drink with her as they stood together staring out into space. Leo knew that in a few hours he was going to be leaving the Endurance and possibly not coming back. The two of them had never been physical. Faith still had the morals and mores of a 19th century girl, even though she could repair starships from the 22nd. So they stayed that way for an hour, Leo holding her tight with soft music playing in the background, staring out at the stars. Leo finally had to let go, and when he did, he gave her something. It was a gold necklace with a golden lion on it. Leo had it made yesterday. It had taken considerable time in the ship's replicators, and had taken a big chunk out of the molecular supply, which had been immediately replaced from the Endurance's supply. But it was all worth it when she placed it around her neck. The lion's head was of the same design the guys had used in the ship's insignia. Faith cried when she kissed Leo. He wiped away her tears from her eyes. He hated to go, but De Clooney wanted him on the bridge at 1800 hours. Leo kissed her gently and held her tight and said, "See you later," and walked out the door. He had barely gotten out of the door before he had to wipe some tears from his own eyes. Chapter 25, 28 November, 2151. The commander had arrived on board the Endurance about 2100 hours and had been met by Captain De Clooney. The commander's shuttle was piloted by one of the bodyguards Leo had seen aboard the Redemption 3 weeks before. Leo had sent Holiday over to the shuttle to grab the commander's bag. When Holiday had asked the man if he could help him, the man just stared back. Holiday stated that he got cold shivers up and down his spine when the short, bald man stared him down. The bodyguard just stood in front of the shuttle with the commander's bag between his feet until the commander showed back up an hour later. The commander then picked up the bag, told the man it was all right, he could leave. Leo watched the man get back into the small shuttle and take off. If Leo had more time, he would have listened in on the flight control channel to see if the man talked, or if he had used a computer to relay the information back and forth. The commander had then made his way to the front gangplank and had been met by Yoshida, who welcomed him aboard. Leo was a little busy at the time dealing with the pre-flight checks to do it himself. Yoshida had immediately asked the commander for his bag, which was then placed on his scanning shelf and fully accounted for down to the last molecule by Larry. Then after this was accomplished, Yoshida led the man to the medical bay where Fenucci did a scan on the man in the auto dock. This information was relayed to Larry and kept on file in case the commander had need of the auto dock while on the trip. Leo continued with the pre-flight check, disengaging the various links between the Lion and the Endurance. The last two to be disengaged would take place a few minutes before the liftoff. Leo had completed the entire pre-flight procedure and turned the mothering of the last double checks over to Moon and Larry. Leo went down to the crew deck and checked on Yoshida and the commander. When he got down there, he caught Yoshida going over some emergency procedures that were unique to the recon ship with the commander. "Welcome aboard, Commander," Leo said when his first mate was finished with the instruction. "Thank you, Captain. No need to make a fuss over me. I'm sure you have a lot of things to do, yet. Your first mate was about to take me up to the flight deck and get me red-bond by your computer." "Sounds good. Yoshida, brief him on my station. Make sure he gets the Level 1 clearance. Then set him up with a tutorial program. Level 5 for now," Leo said, looking on any input from the commander. The commander just nodded, as did Yoshida. Leo looked around and excused himself and headed down the ladder. Leo made his way to the front ramp to the flight deck of the Endurance. Leo checked on Fundakowski and Holiday, who were doing the last pre-flight inspection of the hull. Leo then walked over to the flight control center located in the central part of the deck. This was the last formal check with the Endurance that was done on a face-to-face basis. Normally, this was done with the junior lieutenant or sergeant. This last time it was a bit different. There, wearing the bright yellow jumpsuit of the flight deck controller, was Senior Captain De Clooney. Standing by his side, in a red jumpsuit of the emergency services controller, a mostly wait-and-react position, was Senior Lieutenant Farlow. Leo stopped when he saw the two of them. They did not react, they just asked him for the comm panel, which he surrendered to De Clooney. De Clooney plugged it in and downloaded the information, and checked it out with the information he had. He looked up from the display and told Leo everything checked out. Leo nodded, then Farlow extended his hand, as did De Clooney. Leo shook them both, and then turned and left the alcove off the main deck. Once back on the main deck, he looked over the line from afar. It was a beautiful ship. The lines were sleek and smooth. The back of the ship, the engines, and hangar bay blended perfectly with the spherical disc of the command decks, the crew quarters, and the ground vehicle bay. Leo said a silent prayer and walked towards her. Leo looked around the deck, hoping to see Faith, but he knew she would be somewhere in the shadows, but not willing to come forward. They had said their goodbyes in private, and it would remain that way. Leah walked underneath the ship, touching sensor and scanner components at occasional spots, checking seals on the lower hatches. It really was unnecessary, because Leary could tell him all the information in half a second, but Leo felt better doing it. Checking his watch, he noted 7 minutes to wheels up. Leo checked one more scanner element and made his way to the front ramp. Once up the ramp, he activated a comm unit on the wall. "Larry, is the crew all on board?" "They are currently moving to their assigned locations for takeoff," Larry replied quickly. "Good. Close all exterior hatches, conduct a final exterior and internal scan, then get ready for liftoff." Leo did not wait for a reply. He knew Larry would already be started. He climbed the ladder to the flight deck. Leo punched Gutenberg on the shoulder as he passed by on the way to the cockpit. Gutenberg had given up his normal seat in the cockpit so that the commander would have a good view of the liftoff now. So now Gutenberg had transferred all his command functions back to a workstation about 10 feet behind the raised cockpit. Leo reached up and tugged on the pant leg of Sergeant Gonzalez, who was sitting in his normal position behind the big gun above the cockpit. The sergeant swiveled his chair around and looked down. "Yeah, Cap," the man said pleasantly. "Prayer in," Leo looked at his watch. 2 minutes. "Roger, Captain." The acting chaplain nodded and swiveled back behind the gun. Leo paused between Yoshida and the commander, then sat down in the pilot seat next to Moon. He strapped himself in and readjusted his comm link, then activated. "Okay, everyone, prayer in 1 minute, then final checklist. Any red lights, signal immediately. This is a slow, methodical takeoff. Let us get it right." Leo got a chorus of aye-ayes, looked over his panel one last time, and continued. "Juan, lead us in prayer," Leo commanded. "Lord, you are the one. You make the heavens, forgive us our sins, and lead us on our path. Watch over our souls and protect our bodies. Thank you for your wisdom, and thank you for the wonders we have seen. In the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen." The chorus of amens came around Leo and over the comm link as well. "Larry, disengage from the Endurance," Leo began the flight sequence. "Yes, sir. Separating internal and external sensors and scanners from Daryl in 3 seconds. This was always the most critical part. By Larry disengaging the systems from Daryl, the computer who ran the Endurance, anything changed aboard the Lion, and the Endurance had to make a sudden hyperspace jump. The jump itself could go wrong, and the worst-case scenario would be the Endurance making a bad jump. This was something Leo did not want to think about. Of course, the chances of Endurance having to make an emergency jump was rare, but it was something to be cognizant of. "Disengagement complete, Captain," Larry answered. "Endurance, we are ready for liftoff. Clear the immediate area," Leo stated. "Area is clear," came the voice of his speaker. "Roger, commence procedure," the voice of DeClooney came over the comm link. "Release the mooring clamps," Leo stated. "Mooring clamps release, Lion," the voice of the deck controller stated. "Are we clear to approach the exit way?" Leo asked, knowing the answer. "You are clear, Lion. Approach the exit way on thrusters." "Roger. Lion is leaving the deck." Leo punched up the lift controller to the minimum level, and he could feel the Lion lift the prescribed 3 inches from the deck. Leo then punched up the keys for the rear thrusters and put them at a minimum power. "Everything is clear," stated Moon, who was sitting next to Leo on his right-hand side. "Moving rear thrusters up to 1% power." "Roger, Lion, you have a green light to clear Endurance." "Roger, Endurance," Leo said, advancing the throttle on the rear thrusters slowly. "Lion, from the crew of the Endurance, Vio con Dios, and may the wind be at your back." Leo looked around the cockpit and got thumbs up from everyone and replied as they cleared the deck of the Endurance. "Thank you, Endurance, from myself and the crew of the Arrogant Lion. Make sure the beer is cold, the barbecue pit is fired up, and keep the faith. Scouts out." Leo ended with an old American cavalry saying. The story went that when an officer in the American cavalry of the Old West had asked a sergeant where the unit's scouts were, the sergeant replied simply, "Scouts out, sir." This had been the motto for a lot of reconnaissance units ever since, and the long-range reconnaissance ships were no exception. Leo maneuvered the Lion away from the Endurance, then set a course for the center of Wolf. "Yoshida, you want to take your seat back?" Leo said, swiveling towards his first mate, who was sitting at the communication officer's station. "Sure," Yoshi said, turning towards his captain. "Moon, you got it for the switch?" Leo asked the co-pilot. Moon nodded and placed his hands on the controls. "Okay, Yoshi, let's do it." Leo unbuckled himself from the chair and got up and switched spots with his first mate. Good piloting, Captain Grant, Commander Wasabowski said as Leo got comfortable. Turning to the man, Leo replied, Thank you, sir. So do you do this often, switch pilots for takeoffs and other maneuvers? Yes, sir. Everyone on board is checked out on flying the line, as well as the sharks. With such a small crew, you can never tell who's going to be on duty if something unforeseen happens. So it required everyone to maintain at least a level 3 operating level as pilots. I see. Well, that is comforting to know, the commander said, sounding pleased. Leo did not know this man at all, but he did not say too much, and when he did talk, it was mostly questions. Maybe that is why he was a commander, and Leo was only a captain. Commander, may we have the course you want us to follow? Leo asked. The man pulled out a comm panel, activated it, and handed it to Leo. Leo looked it over briefly, then handed it to Yoshida. Sir, do you have any orders? Not this time. Just when we reach the final point on the course I have given you, call a meeting of your crew. I will brief them at that time. Then he got up and departed the control deck. After a few minutes, Gutenberg transferred his controls back to the bridge, made himself comfortable in what was normally Leo's seat. So what I would like to know, and I believe you speak for the rest of the crew, what is going on, Captain? Leo looked at him first, just stared out the cockpit, off into the space at the stars. Then turning to his communications officer, Leo exhaled briefly. You will find out in... Yoshida finished the sentence for him. Exactly 36 hours when we reach the end of the course the commander gave us. Chapter 26. The next day on the Lion was the edgiest Leo had ever seen. Not edgy from working too hard. Heck, the last month had been one of the easiest since they had left Sanctuary. Just training and liberal amounts of rest. Now this was the edginess that could only be cured with information. Sketchy though it was, Leo wanted to share what he had had with his men, and Leo was hungry for a chance to get more details from the commander himself. Leo had moved the crew to 9-hour shifts, split into 3. Leo was the shift's commander, as was Yoshida and Fia. This gave the crew ample opportunity for rest and continued training. The guys were doing extensive partner drills on their off hours, including vigorous exercise programs. With the ship's gravity turned up to 1.3 Earth normal and the atmosphere up to 1.25 miles above sea level. The guys had been living this way for a month and were at peak physical health again. Leo had Larry monitor everyone's diet closely. Some of the guys, especially Fia, had a tendency to overeat, especially when they were on edge. Leo had moved the guys to 3 ships for several reasons. First of all, he wanted them at top form when they got where they're going. Secondly, he wanted them to have as little time to think about where they're going as possible. And at a training pace he had set with Larry, the crew had little time to ponder the way things might go. Leo had just finished his own hour on the treadmill and was getting ready to start his heavy bag work when a chime rang on the nearby comm panel. He reached out and hit it. Yeah, what is it? Just thought you'd like to know, Cap. We just lost our escort from the 3rd Squadron. You mean the fighter team? Leo asked, trying to remember which troop was giving him the escort. Yeah, the Crows. They just said Arrivederci. What language is that, anyways? Italian, I think. Well, move the scanners up to level 8. Continue with the course laid in, Leo replied, rubbing his hair with a towel. Okay, done, boss. We are still on course. Good. To wherever we are going, Packer responded with a voice digging for answers. That is enough, pilot. Leo out. Then he punched the comm panel off. Leo had been getting this type of question every day since he had come back from the Admiralship. Even Yoshida had done some fishing once or twice. Leo, meanwhile, had done some research into the Horde and peace treaties in his spare time in the privacy of his cabin under a level 1 security screen so the rest of the crew would not know what he was studying. The records provided by the outfitters on the Illyrians were, to say the least, sparse, which is not typical of their narratives. That meant one or two things to Leo. There was not that many records of peace treaties because there were not that many. Or peace treaties were such a rare and non-influential part of the Illyrian history, they were beneath mentioning. A lot of study about the Illyrians and their concepts of diplomacy. Leo had come to some definite conclusions. They respected strength and power, and not much else. If someone did not have money or an army backing them, then they did not have an impact on Illyrian history, which was a succession of dictators coming to power either financially or militarily, or in some instances both. Take, for instance, the Emperor's family's Stahlhelms. It had been in power for the last 500 years, but they had taken control in a duel, and Leo had to admit brilliant fiscal and an armed coup d'etat. In simple terms, the family had seized control by buyouts of the immediate systems around Alara, the homeworld of the Alarians. Then they had raised import and export taxes. Then they had begun to search the cargo, both inbound and outbound, for information. These searches were either done physically, searching the ships, getting ambassadors drunk, or raiding the databanks of the ships. Once this information was gathered, the military members of the Stalhit claim would either destroy or steal vital shipments going from one clan to another. This made the Emperor's family lose both face and incoming funds. So with the system in place, the Stalhits, over the course of several years, gained power, money, and military might. In the last few months, the grip around the past Emperor's family became so tight that support from the clans who supported them was almost non-existent. In the end, the forces of the Stalhits and those clans who had switched their sides surrounded Alar and waited. The entire Emperor's family killed themselves, as per Alarian custom. Then the Stalhits had moved in and assumed command, with a few summary execution of clan leaders who had either wavered on the fence between supporting the Emperor and or the Stalhits. That was the interesting thing Leo had found out about the Alarians. They were not ones to sit on the fence. Yes was yes, and no was no. They were decisive and creatures of honor. Not saying they would not change sides in the middle of a fight, but if they did, they would at least call their old allies and announce their change of affiliation, then blast them a few minutes later. It was all very well defined in the Alar Code of Conduct and Honor, which every Alarian male memorized by their 15th birthday. The most fascinating facet of the very Machiavellian Alarian Code of Conduct was the provisioning for ruling. Fairness and justice were foremost. Not saying that the ideas were the same as human standards, but well defined and adhered to strictly. Chapter 27. Leo, 1 hour till we leave hyperspace. Right, Leo responded from his bunk. Leo had come off his shift and had gone to bed. Initially, he had thought that the commander would be sharing the cabin with him, but Packer and Logan had given up their cabin and moved to the hangar bay. They both claimed that this was so they could have quicker reaction time if they should need to launch. Leo let it pass. The two of them were, in his opinion, overly protective of their sharks. And if anyone else was tasked to fly them, the guys went over the machines with handheld scanners and tweezers looking for damage. They also acted like caged animals until the sharks were landed back on board, which bugged the heck out of everyone else who was in close proximity to them. Leo thought that everyone was better off with the two pilots sleeping in the hangars. Leo got up and put on his clothes along with his gun belt and vest. He didn't normally wear these last two items on board his ship, but since they were going into unknown territory, he wanted to be ready for anything and everything. Leo made his way out of the cabin to the lounge area, sitting around and not talking, were Fundakowski and Holiday. Normally, these two worked well together and competed fiercely in the practice rounds between the guys and the ball turrets, but now they looked like they had just had a fight. Leo eyed them suspiciously while getting some food from the replicators. Sitting down at the table with them, they both nodded, but did not say anything. After taking a few bites of his sweet and sour chicken, Leo was ready. Okay, guys, what is the problem? Neither one said anything. They just stared at each other. If we don't get this problem solved by the time I'm finished eating, I'm going to make you get up, hug each other, then sit in a circle and chant while holding hands, Leo said sarcastically, not looking towards either of them. This elicited laughs from both their somber faces, mostly because Leo had done this to Logan and Fundakowski once. It was while they were still in orbit around Sanctuary. They had just had a shouting match and were sitting in the lounge with everyone else, and tension was still pretty thick in the air. So Leo had ordered them to hug each other, then sit in the middle of the floor and hum. This had brought roars of laughter from everyone, and Logan and Fundakowski had smiled slightly. After that, their fights never got beyond the name-calling stage. Fundakowski started out by turning red. Well, we don't need to go through that again. Yes, well, anyways, Holiday said, still grinning. We were discussing the mission and the whole situation out here. You guys will find out this mission soon enough, so patience, Leo replied. Well, what we wanted to know was a little bit broader than the details of the mission, boss, Fundy said. Okay, well, shoot. Leo was puzzled now. Well, we all know that before the outfitters picked us up, our lives didn't amount to a hill of beans, Holliday stated. Or so they say, Funnikowski said, glaring at his partner. Leo had heard the comment before in more a way of a question. How did the outfitters know their lives had no impact if they weren't allowed to live them? This is one of the great unanswerables, along with the questions, why are we here? What is the meaning of life? Where does the last sock go from the pair you put in the dryer? Holliday let the comment pass and continued. So what we're wondering, if we're making any sort of difference now? Leo was momentarily stymied, but before he could reply, Funnikowski cut in. Yeah, who's ever going to know we're out here doing all this? And do the people of Earth even care? They both stopped there and looked towards Leo. Luckily, Leo had thought about this at length and had an answer, and he hoped that it was a good enough for them, because it was the only one he had come up with. Well, I shall try and answer your questions with the answers that I have come up with for myself. Leo looked at both guys and each nodded. You know that supposedly none of us were ever going to have kids when the outfitters picked us up. Well, when I first woke up, I looked up my family history, what happened to it after I was snatched and all that. I tried to do the same sort of thing. I had a brother that lived in California. I never found a record of him anywhere. Well, that's not surprising. Records were not computerized until the 1970s, and not even everyone's family was enough importance to be in newspapers and history books before that. The guys both nodded at this, and Leo continued. Well, my little sister got married and had kids, and those kids had kids, and so on down through the centuries. So now I have a couple of hundred great, 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 I think one more great, number of nieces and nephews. And that is who I'm protecting when I'm out here, maybe fighting the Horde. Well, that answers why, but not if, anyone is ever going to know we were out here, Funnikowski said in a negative tone. I was getting to that, Leo said, rolling his eyes. So anyways, the people of Earth do know we are out here, at least they should by now. Do you remember when we were given the choice back on Sanctuary to either stay with the fleet or strike out on our own? The two rangers nodded. So Leo continued. Well, some of the members of the fleet reported to the Admiral, said they were going back to Earth, and so the Admiral had them take some messages back with them. I see, sort of like homing pigeons, Holliday nodded. Not exactly. These messages not only gave out information pertaining to what was going on out here, but also gave the people of Earth information on hyperdrive systems, positronic brains, and other advances that would bring the people of Earth up to this level of technology. Leo said this final part, motioning around the ship. Wow, how come we never heard about this before? Holliday asked. Well, I got this information at a captain's briefing, and we were told not to release until we left the sanctuary system, and only if someone asked us, and you guys were the first ones to ask. So now you know. So the people of Earth know we are out here? Holliday asked. They should by now. The first messengers probably reached Earth a couple months ago, barring any unforeseen circumstances. So have we heard from Earth yet? Funday asked. I don't know. Maybe. If so, the Admiral hasn't released that information yet. Do you think Commander Wisbowski knows? Holliday asked. Leo thought he was being rhetorical, but decided to answer anyways. If the Admiral knows, then probably the Commander knows, and you can ask him yourself in about... Leo looked at one of the clocks on the wall. An hour or two. Both men nodded and murmured something to the effect that they would ask when they got the chance. One more thing, guys. Even if no one ever knew we were out here, we should still do the right thing and try and stop the Horde. Yeah, I guess you're right. From the history I know about the Alarians, they are not a nice bunch, Holliday stated emphatically. Well, it's not like we're doing anything else, so I guess this will do until something better comes along, Funnikowski agreed sarcastically. Leo looked the two over and mentally checked the schedule in his head. Say, aren't you two supposed to be doing your physical training right now? Yeah, Cap, just getting back to it, Holliday said, standing quickly and taking his water bottle with him. Funnikowski did not say a word, just smiled sheepishly and followed his partner down the hall. With that, Leo dug into his food, which had gotten colder as he spoke. Leo found this was a common occurrence while on board the line. He would start to eat and get interrupted. By the time he started eating again, the food was considerably colder. R.H.I.P., Leo thought. Rank has its pains.
Chapter 28. We are in orbit, Yoshida announced over the comm link. Roger.
Gunners, I want continuous scans, overlapping grid patterns, Gutenberg, all sensors and scanners to level 9 for now. As soon as the briefing is over, move them back down to level 8. Moon, move the ship down to energy level 5. Fia, I want those engines down to a minimum discharge, ready to go to full power in 3 seconds. Packer and Logan, I want you guys to couple the sharks for fast release. No need to bring them all the way back aboard. And I want your scanners doing backup with Larry's. Everyone in the lounge in 15. Leo barked the orders without much thought. They had done this so many times he didn't really think about it anymore. A chorus of eyes came back over the comm channel, and Leo watched on his screens as the various functions of the ship started to go to the levels he ordered. After 5 minutes, Leo unstrapped himself from his seat, looked over the cockpit once more, and then made his way down to the lounge area. The commander was already standing near one of the tables looking over his comm panel when Leo activated the replicator. "Everything all right, Captain? How long till I brief your crew?" the second in command of the fleet asked him without looking up from his work. "Everything is fine, sir. Conditions are being set up for the briefing. The men should be filing in soon." "Good. I want everyone here, including your robots." "Yes, sir. They are included in all the briefing for shipboard events." "I see. Well, I assume their self-destruct mechanisms are primed and ready if they should fall into enemy hands." This was more of a command than a question. "Yes, sir. In fact, my chief engineer has packed a data eraser scrambler in with the self-destruct mechanism, so that during the countdown, all information is erased and muddled, as well as the CPU of the droid being destroyed." "Very good, very good," the man said without hearing the response, Leo thought. "You may have your men sit as soon as they come in." "Yes, sir," Leo said. And as he did, Finucci and Verde entered the room. Leo motioned for them to sit, which they did. As the rest of the crew entered, they took the hint and quietly sat down as well. The last two into the room were Logan and Packer in their flight suits, helmets in hand, who stood as close to the exit as they could. Everyone was sitting except Leo, Winchester, and the two heavy repair droids, Felix and Oscar, while the four minor repair droids perched on Finucci. The crew looked back and forth to the commander, to the captain, and Leo started to get self-conscious, feeling as though he should do something. "Ahem, sir. Everyone is here," Leo announced to the commander, who was looking at his comm panel. "Very good, Captain Grant. You may sit as well." Leo found a seat next to Yoshida and planted himself. "Officers and crew of the Arrogant Lion, I know you have been waiting for this information for a long time." He paused and looked around the room. Normally, if Leo or someone else from the line was up talking, someone would throw a snide comment at this point. Nothing. "Well, a little over 3 months ago, the Admiral proposed an idea. I was opposed to it, while others on the staff favored it. After much debate and arguing, a decision was reached. And that is why we are out here, in front of Wolf." The commander took a breath and continued. "The idea was to send an envoy to the Alarian government to determine if there was any chance of a peace treaty between the Alarians and Earth." There was an immediate uproar, including a few exclamations, wondering if the Admiral was insane. At ease of the noise came the booming voice of Sergeant Gonzalez, who studied the group in these types of meetings. The noise subsided immediately, and the commander continued. "Thank you, Sergeant. As I was saying, I was opposed to this attempt from the beginning. My own studies of the Horde, and more importantly, of Valerian history, I realized that there has never been a successfully, mutually accommodating peace treaty between any race and the Horde. True, the Alarians allow the Kaluans, the Alarian of space, don't inhibit their experiments to any great degree, but make no mistake, the Alarians hold all the cards in that partnership. As for the Stenotians, well, they are basically a slave race, no matter how much fighting they do for the Alarians." There were some nods around the room at this. Anytime the Alarians met another race, the only thing they understood was their own need for either total domination or destruction of that other race. Their internal code of conduct applies to no one but other Alarians, and everyone else is just a subject race to do their bidding. "So why the offer of peace, then? Why not just attack them?" The angry voice of Fia came from the back of their lounge. "Why indeed? That is what I asked the Admiral. And his reply is why we're here." The commander stopped and looked around the room. "The Admiral stated to myself, his chief of staff, and the squadron commanders, that since he was commander of the first interstellar venture from Earth, and we were the first Earthlings to encounter a race of extraterrestrials, he was going to meet them with all the courage, strength, and honor he had. He stated that it would be both cowardly and dishonorable to start a war of such potential magnitude with no advance warning to the enemy, even though they would not bat an eye about destroying our home with no thought of warning us. In other words, he does not want to reduce himself to the level of the enemy, said Yoshida quietly. That is correct. The Admiral is a man of honor and nobility, and I would follow him to the ends of the universe if he asked. And it would not weigh easily on his conscience if it were to start a war, ending people's lives in the process, without at least pursuing the albeit slim possibility of peace without bloodshed. Yes, but what if we are the first ones to shed our blood on a mission that has no chance of succeeding? Fia shouted from the back of the crowd. Well, first of all, I don't believe the Ilarians will kill us without a good reason. Remember, they are people driven by greed. I believe that if we deliver the message without insulting them, then they will let us go and try and follow us home. So on our way back to the fleet, we go down to energy level 3 or so, Moon stated. I suggest we go down even lower if we can, in order to lose anyone who tries to follow us back, the commander stated, looking towards Leo. Leo nodded, agreeing with the commander. Now then, any questions? The commander asked. That was all it took. The crew had a lot of questions. Like, where were we going directly to the Emperor with an offer of peace? How long was the trip going to take? What were the orders if the ship was fired upon? What would happen if the peace treaty was accepted? Would the fleet return to Earth? And a few other dozen questions. Leo just sat back and listened, knowing that he'd probably learn more if he did, instead of trying to think up a question of his own. The commander answered all the questions as best he could, and outlined the overall strategy as well. The Admiral had directed the message to be delivered to a powerful Ilarian, with no less rank than a member of the Ilarian Congress, of which there were only 100 members. Even though the Ilarians were a totalitarian dictatorship, the Emperor still listened to his people, and the voices he listened to first were from the Congress. These were the richest and most powerful Ilarians, who bought seats on the Congress from the Emperor every 2 years. Whoever was the highest bidder got the seats. Of that 100, 5 were selected by the Emperor to sit on his council. These were mostly trusted members of his clan, closely allied to the Emperor and his family. It was ambitious of the Admiral to have picked a Congress member. These clan leaders usually had between 8 to 20 clans in allegiance under them, and subsequently, all those clan ships and their planetary resources at their disposal. Whichever clan leader they approached would be shrewd and cunning, otherwise they would not have been able to hold that many clans in allegiance. One thing that the Admiral had counted on, though, was the Ilarian political system. If his message did get delivered, the Congress member might just keep the information to himself in order for his clans to possibly profit from it. Therefore, the Emperor might never realize there was an enemy fleet out there, and he would not mobilize the huge Imperial fleet. The Ilarian Congress member the Admiral had directed the commander to take the offer of peace to was one whose territory barely extended towards Wolf. His territory reached mainly away from Earth. By giving him the peace treaty, odds were 50-50 he would pass on the information to the Congress. Secondly, by giving the information to a member of the Ilarian Congress that had no interest in expanding its borders towards Earth, he'd be very hesitant to tell his neighboring Ilarian competitors that a hostile enemy was located just beyond the horizon, metaphorically speaking. This particular Ilarian, though, had enough money and power to bring this information to the Emperor's attention if he wanted to. Therefore, what would keep peace being achieved would be the Ilarians themselves. As for how long this mission might take, depended on the Ilarians. If the congressman was easy to get a hold of, then the matter might take only a few weeks, with travel included. If it was hard to gain an audience, well, it might take much longer. Finally, Leo had one question that he asked the commander in front of everyone, because he wanted the crew to know the answer too. Leo had formed a hypothesis about the answer and wanted to know if it was correct. Commander, may I ask you why the Admiral selected you to present the peace treaty when you were opposed to it? The commander looked him over for a few moments and sighed. Good question, Captain. One that I asked myself, but I never did ask the Admiral. Although I suppose it's because I would pursue the matter with a level head and try and keep us, as well as the fleet, from making a disastrous decision by being too eager for the project to succeed for my own ego's sake. This made Leo feel better. At least the senior person in charge was not out to gain glory or make a history for his own sake. He was out there to complete a mission and go home. If there are no more questions, the commander started to say, Well, sir, I got one, and my partner were wondering about it earlier, and Leo said you would answer it if you could. Holiday stated slowly, Holiday stated slowly, glancing at Sergei and Leo. "Ask away, Ranger," the commander responded. "Well, we were wondering if Earth had been contacted, and what they have to say about all this." Good question, and I will tell you what I can," the commander smiled, crossing his arms. "As some of you might know, some of the people that decided not to join the fleet wanted to go directly to Earth. Those people have been nicknamed the Homebounders. They've given messages for the current government of Earth, and as of several months ago, we know that one of the ships reached the Earth and delivered the messages." There was a murmur from the crew at this. The commander held up his hands for quiet and continued, "We got a few messages from the ship's captain. Then all of a sudden they stopped, and we do not know why." This elicited a greater uproar from the crowd, and then Flavius asked, probably rhetorically, "Could the Illyrians have taken over?" This caused an even greater uproar among the assembled group. "At ease in the noise, folks, and let the commander speak," Leo said, standing up. The crew quickly quieted down again. "Thank you, Captain. It has been the Admiral's belief, and mine as well, that the leaders of Earth have asked the ship's pilot, one Martin Apple, originally designated as a repair technician on the fighter launcher ship the Coral Sea, to stop sending communications to us, possibly for the reason that they wanted to prevent any intelligence information about the state of Earth's defense posture to be inadvertently given or intercepted by the Horde. So, to tell you the truth, I'm not that worried about it, and neither is the Admiral. Now then, are there any other questions?" The commander looked around the room, as did Leo and Yoshida. "Very good, then. As I said earlier, if you excuse me, I have my daily exercises as well. And if your captain insists on raising the gravity and reducing the oxygen level anymore, all the exercise I will need is getting out of bed in the morning." Leo watched the commander go, and then got up in front of the crew himself. "Okay, you heard the man. We are going to do a face-to-face with the Illyrians. I want everyone doing at least 3 hours on individual workouts. Shift commanders, get with me, and we will work on an extra hour exercise for each shift. Sort of a mini gauntlet. Get back to your bunks. I want you well rested and on your toes when 2300 hours rolls around. Move out, people." Chapter 29. The trip during the first week was the most part uneventful, and after the commander's briefing, the Lion left the first system, proceeded to go via hyperspace from one system to the next. The only thing noted during the trip was occasionally, while monitoring the scanners, Gutenberg thought he sighted a ship on extremely long range. After trying to revamp the system and play back the scan, it turned out to be a momentary blip. Leo passed it off as a momentary feedback from the random stellar phenomenon. "Leo, I just got that blip again," Gutenberg stated over the comm channel routed into Leo's cabin. Leo rubbed his eyes and turned up the light slowly in his cabin. "Abe, I just woke up. Could you be more specific? Do you remember that shadow I scanned back about a week ago?" "Yeah, vaguely, I recall it. I thought we came to the conclusion that it was a random event." "Well, that random event just happened again," Gutenberg said excitedly. "That was the one long-range scan, just about at maximum range, right?" Leo said, fully awake now, and a bit angry because he did not have to get up for another hour. "Yeah, but it was there again." "How many similarities with the other incident?" Leo asked, trying to wrap his brain around the problem. "Well, none really. The energy spikes don't match, and neither do any of our other readouts," Gutenberg voiced, still sounding unsure of himself. "What does Fia say about it?" Wondering where the shift commander was. "He has not seen the screens yet. He was manually checking the new switching devices in the engine room when it happened, and he told me to use my best judgment on whether or not to call you." Leo propped himself up on one arm and contemplated strangling the big Samoan. "So why, if none of the energy spikes match the last anomaly, did you call me?" Leo said, not disguising his anger. "Because the last phenomenon happened when we were exactly 2 hours and 15 minutes out of hyperspace. And this incident happened when we were exactly 2 hours and 16 minutes out of hyperspace. Doesn't that seem strange to you?" Leo had to admit that it did seem strange, but not enough to be overly concerned about. "Tell you what, run your findings by Larry. Ask him if he can give any type of mechanical reasons for the shadow. Then if there's no reasonable explanation, then let me know. If not, let me know when I come on shift in exactly 45 minutes. Leo out." We'll be right back. Chapter 30. Coming out of hyperspace in 3, 2, 1. The sound was like nothing else, and looking outside the cockpit window, Leah experienced a sudden falling sensation, then the feeling of coming to an almost complete stop. This, of course, was not true, because the ship still had a great deal of forward momentum at this point, and would continue in the same direction it had been going according to Newton's laws of motion. Just the fact that they had traveled between two star systems in 2 days instead of it taking 2 years, then were back to traveling in normal space, accounted for the sudden feeling of stopping. Scanners up to 7, sensors to 8. I want to know if something is out there, Abe. A muffled yes followed the sounds of the buttons being pushed, and all that followed. Leo could not blame the guy. His field was sensor and scanners, and Leo had outthought him in his own field. It was determined, after much discussion with Larry, as well as a look through the circuitry, that the shadows Gutenberg had picked up was feedback from the circuits, basically a false positive from the energy being projected out to far ranges, and the scanner modules having a residual energy from the hyperspace jump. So Leo was right about it, and Abe Gutenberg was wrong. Leo thought it might have been some sort of circuitry problem, even though Larry could only give a 40% probability that the fact that the circuitry was the reason for the false positives. Abe continued to look for other anomalies, even though everyone on the cockpit crew thought it was a waste of time. "Do you have anything, Abe?" "Nothing yet, Captain," Abe responded. Leo felt a chill from across the aisle, but figured Abe would get over it eventually. "Yoshi, what is our course through this system?" "We got 5 bogeys at our 12 o'clock," Yoshi said in a calm manner. "Make that 6. We just picked up 1 more on long range," Abe added. "Okay, everyone, play it cool," Leo announced. "We knew that this was going to happen when we got here." "Just picked up 3 to our rear," Abe announced, a hint of excitement in his voice. "Packer, Logan, are you guys ready for possible emergency launch?" "Roger, Leo, we are strapped in tight, and the hangar bays are in a vacuous state," came back the slow drawl from Packer. "Good. If we are fired upon, you know the drill." "Roger, Leo, standing by," Packer responded. "The front 5 will be within weapons range in 30 seconds. Leo checked over his board. Weapons system power down, the only thing at 100% were the targeting scanners and the common scanners. No hostile action could be taken from that. "Got anything in the form of communication from them yet?" "Negative, Captain." "Larry, do you have confirmation on type?" "Roger, Captain. All bogeys are Alarian design, Wook class, manufactured by Alarnet-Navet clan. Last year's model. Heavy weapons. Class 5 armor. Top speed is just below that of the Sharks." "Thank you, Larry. Kim, target the front 5 first. If something happens, let the Sharks take care of the ones to our 6. You got that, Packer and Logan?"
"Got it, Leo,"
Packer responded.
"Roger, Cap," Kim responded.
"Cap, the leader of the 2 fighters to our front is signaling us." "Okay, everyone stay cool and remember the plan." Leo motioned for Abe to open a channel for a response. "Alarian fighters, this is the Arrogant Lion of the United Earth Fleet. We request an escort to Snemna 5, Leo asked sternly in Alarian. There was a pause. Leo was pretty sure the commander of the approaching fighters was pretty confused at this point. "Lion, this is Facet of the Arax clan. You have 10 seconds to turn your ship around or be blown out of space," came back in angry Alarian. Leo looked around the cockpit. Kim nodded, meaning the weapons of the fighters were fully charged. Leo grinned. "Facet, this is the captain of the Lion. I again request an escort to Semna 5 for an audience with the great leader of your clan, for the purpose that will provide profitable to him and your entire clan." This last part, the commander had said, was almost sure to gain them some time, if not get them an escort as far as the orbit of Semna 5. "Lion, make your course 197 on this plane. I will communicate your request to Semna 5, but I suspect you will be killed somewhere along the route for entering this sector." Leo nodded. The course would take them to Semna 5's moon, which meant they were to be analyzed. "Very good. Ensure that when you send the communication to Semna 5, tell him I am requesting an audience with your clan leader in a manner that shall be both infinite profit and pleasure for him." The only response to Leo's words was a communication channel being cut off. "Well, Commander, did you monitor all that?" Leo asked, swiveling around. The commander was sitting in one of the stations behind the bridge, with Winchester standing nearby.
"Yes, you did very good, Captain Grant," the commander said, smiling slightly. "Lieutenant Burgeye, How long till we reach Semna Five's moon? At this current speed, 2 hours and 10 minutes, sir. Thank you, Lieutenant, the commander responded. Yoshi, are the fighters in escort formation around us? Sure are. They're all at our six with their weapons trained on our engines. Well, we knew that was going to happen. Okay, everyone, we got 2 hours. Stay at your post. Bathroom and stretch breaks are to be granted by Moon or Yoshi. If you need a bite to eat or something to drink, signal to Winchester. Packer and Logan, you guys can follow the same. Bring your bays back up to normal atmosphere. You guys are probably going to be spending enough time in those things over the next couple of days, so no sense staying in them now, if you don't have to. Thanks, Leo. We shall stay at Condition 3 in case you need us. Condition 3 for Packer and Logan was such that if they needed, they could be in the sharks and lift off within 30 seconds. Okay, everyone, until we hear any more from the Alarians, sit back and enjoy the ride. Chapter 31. What the heck has taken them so long to decide? Abe said out loud, punching buttons with every syllable. Nobody else in the cockpit responded. It was a 16th shift change the line had been through since taking up an orbit around 7-5, and some of the guys' nerves were starting to become frayed. 8 days in orbit, in addition to the five spent in orbit around 7-5's moon, for a total of 13 days. Leo initially had the guys on 12-hour shifts, then he had moved, split them up into 8-hour shifts, again, which Leo hoped would make things easier. Okay. Any changes in the situation since last shift change? Leo asked Yoshi. None. We still have the fighter escort. Blue team for now. Yellow team will all be up in another hour, if nothing has changed. Their second follow along unmanned sensor array is making minor course correct adjustments over every 15 minutes due to problems with its guidance system. The technicians from the Northern Space Station send in self-correct measures intermittently, with no solution in sight, and the cloud cover on the planet continues, not allowing us for any type of visual sensor sweeps. Very good. Okay, Yoshi, I have the ship, Leo said, easing into the co-pilot seat and switching the command functions to his panel from Yoshi's. His first mate unbuckled his straps and stood up and stretched. Boy, this is getting boring. Yeah, but just think of the neat stories we'll have to tell our grandkids, Leo responded. I like you and all, Leo, but I don't think we're going to have kids with you, let alone have grandchildren, Yoshi responded in a serious tone. Get off of my bridge right now, waving him away and not even looking up from the panel in front of him. Leo, someone from the surface is signaling us. We have 10 more bogeys coming in from the direction of the Northern Space Station, the excited voice of Abe called out. Hearing this, Yoshi slid quickly back into his chair. Open up a channel, Leo said, trying to remain calm. Arrogant Lion, this is the first Garg of the Eryx clan. You have permission to land on the following coordinates. I must warn you, any attempt to deviate from the coordinates, so much as a millimeter, will result in your being blown out of the sky. The cold, calm voice came over the channel. First Garg, it is an honor and privilege to receive direction from you. We will follow your course precisely in order that we may bring our proposal, which will benefit us all greatly, to your CD's attention. Very well, Lion, proceed. Leo hurriedly punched up the course, and Leo confirmed it. Then he activated several switches at once and hit the PA channel. Everyone up and to your positions. We have 2 minutes to enter the atmosphere. Pack and Logan, launch one ready. Leo looked back towards Yoshi, who was already bringing the flight controls back online to his position. Leo checked out the manning situation and had 10 of 14 lights green, showing the positions to be manned and 4 still empty. 2 of them blinked green, signaling Packer and Logan were now in position. Go, Sharks, you have a green light for launch. Leo knew this might cause some concern from the surface, but orders were orders, and leaving the Sharks in orbit was part of the plan. The Sharks have cleared the bay and are away from the ship. Good, hit the window, and follow the course sent to us by the first Garg. Leo, who signaled us to enter atmosphere? The voice of the Commander Wasbowski came through the comm unit directly into his ear. It was the first Garg, sir. He did not give me his name, but we are looking to touch down in less than, Leo consulted the flight screen, 20 minutes. Good. The first Garg. That means we have the attention of the CD. Do you remember the protocol for when we land? Leo rolled his eyes. The man was nervous now, was double-checking. They had been through this a dozen times already. Yes, sir. Good. Let us get to this right, and hopefully no one will lose their head, figuratively or literally. The commander added this part due to the fact, if there was a slip-up in protocol, it was not uncommon for a CD of a clan to order beheading. Leo, we got another communication coming in from the planet, Abe announced. Leo raised a finger, signaling to hold it. Yoshi, are we in the window? We are on the approach path directed, and the sharks are in the orbit we just left, the pilot replied. Okay, Abe, put it through. Captain, what is the meaning of this? Leo could hear the anger in the voice and was ready for it. I take it you are referring to the additional ships that just went into orbit. Yes, I am, the Alarian screamed over the comm channel. Sir, after the scanning that you conducted on the ship and over the last several days, I assume you would know that those ships were there. Bliss flustered the man even more, and Leo was confident the sharks were known about for at least a week. Yes, of course we knew about them, but you, no one said you could launch them. I am sorry, First Gog. Would you like us to leave our flight path and return to retrieve them? Or would you like them to land on Semna as well? Leo said, in a sincere and innocent voice as possible. No, absolutely not. Your additional ships can stay in orbit, but your ship must maintain its flight path. Very good, First Gog. I will contact my two ships and let them know your orders. Very good, Captain. The last part was said with a bit of sneer in his voice. Leo knew that he had just made a point with the Garg. By allowing his two ships to stay in orbit, he had not embarrassed the Garg by having to change the landing time or adding additional landing areas. Leo also noted that the Garg had not insulted him. If the Garg was confident of the ability to bully Leo, he would have. But according to an old Alarian saying, do not insult a man until you know what clan he was in. Leo was glad the commander had insisted that everyone in the crew conduct intensive studies of Alarian culture and diplomacy. They would be walking a tightrope these next few days, and studying it made the rope seem a little thicker. The landing was uneventful. Not much could be seen of the planet due to the extensive cloud cover, which extended down to 500 feet. Once the clouds were breached, all that could be seen in the dismal lighting was gray fields of short grass. The landing field was brightly lit with red lights and surrounded by a low wall. The line put down gently on the field with a practiced precision. Not surprisingly, as soon as the touchdown was complete, the line was surrounded. Gutenberg had noted the charged weapons and the personnel behind the wall as they approached, and as soon as the line's landing gear was locked into place, 15 heavy weapon scanners were locked onto it, not to mention 100 or so light man-packed weapons as well. Nice welcoming committee, Yoshi noted, continuing with the shutdown procedures. Could be worse, Moon commented dryly, unbuckling the strap so he could move around the cockpit easier. How's that? Yoshi fired back, still engrossed in his panels. The biggest thing that got pointed at us is an Alarian Mark 19. Oh, goody, so they can only blow a hole through us the size of a basketball instead of, say, a manhole cover, Gutenberg added. Enough already, guys. We knew this was going to happen when we landed, so take it easy, Leo asserted, while running through his displays. Abe, are all of your sensors in place? All but seismic, and they will be in the ground in 10 seconds, the communication officer announced. Okay, good. Get Larry on analysis as soon as you can. I want to report on the guards, their shift, how many, and their status, if any of them sleep, or what they eat while on duty. And if they do anything out of character, I want to know. Highly unlikely any of them would sleep on duty, Captain, came the lecturing voice of the commander, who had wandered up in the cockpit area sometime during the shutdown procedures. Considering how the penalty for falling asleep while on guard duty is death, immediate strangulation by your superior, if my memory serves me correct. Well, I just wanted to know about their movements and such, Leo stated, knowing the commander was seldom wrong concerning any part of Alarian culture. Very good, Captain, the commander stated over his shoulder as he walked away from the cockpit. Leo watched them go and then returned to his attention back to the control screens. What do we do now, Cap? The voice of Juan Gonzalez came down from his perch. We wait and see. I assume the first Garg will contact us again with further instructions. I do not think it will take as long as it did while we were up in the orbit. Hoping he was right. Do you want the gunners out of their positions? The voice from the above asked again. Yeah, bring them down. Tell them I want them in gear and ready to go in 10 minutes. Winchester as well. Roger, Captain. Leo tapped Yoshi on the shoulder. I'm going down to get my gear on as well. Stick to the plan. Yoshi just nodded and continued with his screens. Leo knew that before the man left his seat, he was going to have at least 15 contingency plans for emergency takeoffs plugged into Larry, ready to go at a moment's notice. Leo tapped the other guys on the shoulders as well, and gave them thumbs up, signaling, trying to keep them a little bit more positive attitude about the whole situation. Leo entered his cabin a few minutes later and discarded his vest on the bunk while pulling a semi-heavy jacket from one of the drawers. The climate for Semna 5 this time of year, at least for humans, was uncomfortable. Rain showers almost continuously, and the temperature ranged from 50 to 35 degrees. The days and nights were equal in length the entire year. 15 hours of daylight and 15 hours of darkness. Not complete darkness, though, due to the fact that the planet had 3 moons, and one of them was always full. The jacket was of the same basic design as the vest. Plenty of pockets, waterproof, no zippers, only buttons and clips. Leo transferred all the tools and paraphernalia from the one to the other, and then went to work on his belt. First checking the mag blaster, ensuring it had a full charge, and then performing the function checks automatically. Then he checked the magazines, duplicating his actions 5 times. Drawing his blade, then reset it in its sheath. No need to check it. It was always sharp enough to shave with. Checking the belt itself, along with the holster, ensuring each pouch had the triple fastener system in place. Leo had learned the importance of equipment checks early on. While doing a solo survival mission on Baron, he had lost every food pouch from his backpack because he had not double-checked them before going on a parachute drop from the Lion. The results had been disastrous and deadly if Leo hadn't gotten lucky and found 2 of the pouches within 100 yards of the drop site, and as it was, he was hungry for the entire 5-day mission. Leo checked the comlinks cables and his comm panel as well. Then, when everything else was complete, he added 2 final pouches. These contained matching telescoping size that were spring-loaded. Leo liked to carry the regular size when he could, but this time Leo needed to look as passive as possible, and having 2 large black metal prongs hanging from your hips might not help matters. Leo then placed the belt back on and adjusted it slightly for the new pouches, and continued with his preparations. Reaching into the 3rd drawer down, Leo grabbed 1 more knife, a punch dagger to be exact, and placed it in the top of his left boot. Then reaching into the same drawer, he drew out a packet of throwing stars. These were magnetically locked together and would come out of the packet with just the right twist. Leo was not as good at throwing these as some of the other guys. In fact, he was the worst on the ship, but he could hit a man-sized target 19 out of 20 times at a distance of 20 feet or less. Leo thought it was more of a distraction device than as a true weapon. Leo looked around the room one last time, checked his gear, then grabbed his coat off the bed. "Captain on deck," Leo heard Gonzalez shout. "At ease, Sergeant. Continue what you were doing," Leo said, trying to keep it casual. Leo looked around the large open compartment. The Rangers were rushing around outside of their cabins, each of them checking their gear, fastening it down, or going back into the room for more items. "Okay, Sergeant, who is ready? I know I'm early, but let's do it," Leo said, turning back to the head enlisted men. "Well, Cap, I am ready. If you would like, I could check over your gear as well," the man said, almost apologetically. "Not at all. Check it out, Sergeant." Leo stood still as Gonzalez tugged at some of the pouches and checked some pockets. "Looks good, Captain. Would you check my gear now?" Leo nodded as the man stood for inspection, and as he suspected, Leo found nothing out of place. Gonzalez was carrying his usual load, 2 auto pistols with 6 energy cartridges, instead of throwing knives, 1 spring-loaded baton similar to Leo's size, and a comm panel with comm links. Leo checked through all the pockets of his head and gunner's jacket and came up with the exact gear he had in his own. In addition to all this, he had every miniature sensor and relay device his ship had, along with a small tool set to maintain them. "Hey, Gonzo, think you got enough sensors here?" Gonzalez didn't even turn around. "No, but I noticed you had some room for gear, Cap." "Captain's prerogative. Besides, if I see that we are missing something, then I have room to carry it," Leo shot back, closing the last flap on the jacket. "Good enough, sir." "You set the standard," Leo declared. Then he turned his attention to the Rangers, who were standing by their gear now. Leo turned to the enlisted man in front of him. "Gonzo, you start from this end. I will start up there with the happy-go-lucky Fundakowski," Leo said, eyeing the short man. "All my ducks are in a row, Captain," Fundakowski stated smugly. Yes, but are they all quacking the same tune, Ranger Fundikowski? Leo said gravely. The ranger smiled. Let us see what you got. Leo looked over the ranger. Unlike a majority of the crew, Fundikowski did not wear his sidearm on his belt, but instead wore two auto pistols in under-the-arm holsters. Leo checked both weapons quickly and found them both fully charged, along with the energy magazines located on the holster rig. Moving along to Sergei's heavy belt, he checked three more magazines and a short but very sharp Bowie knife. Sergei's personal non-lethal weapon was a set of nunchucks made with a slightly longer piece of metal chain. Leo had watched the diminutive Polish crew member work out with him, and what he lacked in skill he more than made up for with an almost inhuman tolerance for pain he inflicted upon himself when he missed a catch. Leo checked the chain thoroughly for weak links, then hooked them back into the pouch Sergei had made for them. Next, Leo moved to the heavy jacket and inventoried its contents. It was a standard placement of gear. This was for ease of finding gear in combat if somebody went down. The gear could be quickly salvaged. Standing up and looking directly at the man, he pronounced, "Good enough. Keep your temper under control when we hit the field. Remember, we are on somebody else's playing field today, and they have all the advantages." The Polish ranger just nodded back and then smiled nervously. The rest of the gear checks only took a few minutes, and when they were done, Leo was satisfied. The only thing the rangers were carrying that Leo and Gonzalez were not were carbines. Short but powerful guns. They did not have much range, but packed a heck of a wallop. Each weapon was fully charged, with the men carrying bandoliers of magazines over their shoulders and chests. All in all, the guys looked very dangerous. Leo looked over towards Gonzalez, who was just completing the checks on Winchester. "How's that extra luggage you're carrying, Phil Winnie?"
"No problem at all, Captain. I've been wearing the extra cargo bin for several days, and have calibrated my equilibrium program to acceptable parameters. And the extra drain on my energy charge is nominal," the droid said with his usual formality.
"Good. Juan, how does it look? Any possibility of losing the load? Say if we had to run?"
The short sergeant tested the straps and bolts one more time with a tug and pulled. He turned towards Leo.
"No, sir. No weakness in the structural integrity at all, as far as I can tell."
"Good. Let us hope none of us needs what is in that backpack, but it is good to know that we have it handy."
The pack contained emergency equipment, extra comm units, a small but potent auto dock, and several extra ECUs for the weapons.
"Okay, guys, stand by here on this level. No one leaves. When the Alarians decide to let us off, I don't want to give them a chance to change their minds. Got it?" Leo said loudly. Around the area, the five heads nodded. They were all a bit too nervous to do too much else.
"Okay, anyone seen the commander?"
"I think he is in his cabin, Cap," Finucci volunteered.
"Okay, hang tight."
Leo approached the cabin door and hit the chime.
"Come in," a voice shouted from inside.
Leo pressed the open button and it slid away. The room was slightly darker than the lounge area, but it only took a step for Leo's eyes to adjust. Laid on the table was the commander's gear. The commander himself was kneeling on the floor next to the bed, his hands steepled. Leo paused his entry into the room momentarily. The commander finished his prayers, crossed himself, and stood up, turning to face Leo as he did.
"Yes, Captain. What can I do for you?"
"Well, sir, equipment checks have been completed on everyone except yourself. I was wondering if I could do it now."
"Go ahead, Captain. All my gear is there, on the table, in the proper pockets, according to your SOP, the older man said, gesturing.
Leo looked over the gear quickly, checking through the pouches and pockets.
One question, sir."
"Yes," the man asked, looking up from the comm panel he's working on.
"You're not going to carry a weapon besides your sword?"
"No. From my study of the Alar Code of Conduct, persons of my rank typically do not carry any long-range weapons."
"Got it, sir. Should we pack up any extra ones for you, somewhere, say, with the droid, in case things get hairy?"
"No, we don't want to give the Alarians a reason to take our heads. If I need one, I can probably scavenge one up somewhere."
Leo nodded, not sure if he agreed with the man fully, but not having much of a basis for an argument, he let it lie.
Bing. A warning chime came on near Leo's comms channel.
"Leo, we got a call from the first Garg," Yoshida's voice came over the channel.
"Okay, switch down to the commander's cabin."
Leo reached over for the panel and looked towards the commander's permission. The commander nodded.
Spinning the panel around, Leo activated the receiver. The screen cleared to show the Alarian.
"First Garg, what a magnificent planet you have here. Your Acedi must be proud," Leo said, quickly trying to sound genuine.
Grant, you are allowed a total of 5 personnel to leave your ship. They are to approach the door in the wall in front of your ship. From there, they will be told what to do. Very good, First Guard. May I bring along a robot, or would that be considered one of my 5 personnel? No robots. If I see one coming out of your ship, I personally will have your head. That is very clear, First Guard, Leo said, looking over the top of the screen at the commander, who just shrugged. When may we leave the ship? In 5 minutes, you open your front ramp. In 6 minutes, you may bring 5 personnel down the ramp towards the doorway in the wall. Is that clear, Captain? Perfectly clear, First Guard. Very good. And the channel went dead. Wonder what he has against droids, Leo asked out loud. Probably too hard to check for weapons and explosives, the commander said as he adjusted his jacket. Leo followed the commander out into the bay area. Gonzalez, Fanucci, Verde, you guys are with me and the commander. The rest of you stay with the ship. Report to Yoshida. You guys, motioning towards the select crewmen, down on deck 1 now. The 3 enlisted men moved quickly, taking the ladder. The commander and Leo followed him. Once on the lowest deck, Leo hit his comlink. How much time do we have left, Yoshi? Leo asked, looking at his watch. 40 seconds. The Galarians are still behind the wall at this time, the calm voice came over the PA channel. Leo looked around. The guys fidgeting. Fanucci was adjusting his hat with both hands. Verde was stretching his hamstrings, for what reason Leo had no idea. Gonzalez was brushing imaginary dirt from his pants and jacket. The only one standing there calmly was Commander Wasbowski, who was punching information into his comm panel, slowly and deliberately. Door opening now, Yoshida's voice announced, and the hum of the ramp motors started to power up.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Scouts Out by A.A. Foringer, as read by the author. This audio production, copyright 2015, all rights reserved. A new episode of Scouts Out is released every Saturday. To get an ebook version of this story, go to smashwords.com, where you can find other stories in the Outfitters universe. The story you have just listened to may contain slight variations from the original text due to translation from written word to spoken word, but overall, the story has not been changed. To contact Aaron, visit his blog at aaforinger.com or email him at aaforinger@gmail.com. He is also on Twitter as A.A. Foringer. He craves your feedback, so get to the comm link of your choice and commence with the typing.